Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the April NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed into queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and your organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, do you want to read the notice of the public meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Manier, do you want to do the roll call?
Yes. Chairman Terrence O'Toole.
Present.
Virginia Bowers.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Marcia Morley.
Present.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Jewel Antoine Johnson.
Present.
Doreen Giblin, Executive Representative.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Maureen Caridi.
Present.
Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean Lasserette.
Here.
Saul Sarlo. Not yet. Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. There is one set of meeting minutes for approval today. Before you are the meetings from the March 8th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I would kindly request board members state their name for the record when making a motion or a second. May I have a motion to approve the March 8th board meeting minutes?
Dragon.
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Marley.
Thank you. Any discussion or hearing none, let's proceed with the vote. All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? And I am going to abstain since I was not a member of the board at the March meeting, so it seems like a wise thing to do. Let me make a few brief remarks. Good morning to everyone on this lovely spring morning. I'm honored and humbled to be here at the as the EDA chair today. I'd ask your indulgence and patience as this is my first EDA board meeting. I've spent a lot of time with the EDA team since Governor Murphy asked me to take this position a month ago. One thing I've learned is there are a lot of acronyms. So far, I've got NJ and EDA down. But if I look confused, please bear with me. Another thing I've learned in the past month is there is a great team here at the EDA, led by Tim. And that team is implementing a number of programs advancing Governor Murphy's goal of creating a stronger and fairer economy in New Jersey. I'm in the second or third inning of understanding everything that goes on at the EDA, but I'm incredibly impressed with the breadth and scope of EDA's mandate. It's an exciting time to join the EDA when our reach across industry sectors is so vast. Our role in life sciences, offshore wind, film and television production, real estate development, and manufacturing is vital to New Jersey's long-term economic competitiveness and creating a solid economic foundation for generations to come. And when we support small businesses along our main streets, we uplift families and unlock economic power in communities across the state. This year's theme for Earth Month is Invest in Our Planet, and I'm proud that through our products and programs, the EDA is doing just that. From the ZIP program to Clean Energy Loans program, the recently announced CDAs program, EDA is making critical investments to improve New Jersey's environment. Together, these products align with Governor Murphy's goal of transition to 100% clean energy, mitigating pollution in vulnerable communities, and protecting the health of residents up and down New Jersey. Investing in our green economy will create high-quality, good-paying jobs now and in years to come, positioning New Jersey as a leader in the fight against climate change. I'm excited to begin my tenure as chairman, and I thank all of you for your commitment and dedication to supporting New Jersey's residents and advancing Governor Murphy's bold economic agenda. I grew up across the Delaware River in Wilmington. I married a Jersey girl and have lived here for more than 30 years, so I'm a believer in New Jersey. I look forward to working with my fellow members of the board, Tim and the entire EDA team, as we continue to work towards creating a stronger and fairer economy for New Jersey. Thank you. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tim for the CEO's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me start by welcoming you. It's an honor and a privilege to sit next to you. And
I'm sorry, interrupt.
Of course.
I also...
it's official. You are the chairman.
Okay.
You can do whatever.
I'll do that. I also want to acknowledge Jewel as another new board member. So there are two of us here today, and I told her I'd rely on her for all the, guidance going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let me start by welcoming Terry and also Jewel. I think Governor Murphy made two extraordinary choices to fill openings on our board and stepping into the very large shoes of our departed chairman, Kevin Quinn, and of Rosemary Hicks, who has served in the alternate seat that Jewel now occupies. Two extraordinary people to join our board. Thrilled to have both of them, and in particular to our new chair, who has jumped in with both feet and spent a lot of time with us, probably more than he reckoned for when that phone call from Governor Murphy came through, and we're just getting warmed up. But we really appreciate your time and your commitment, your leadership, and your dedication to this organization. And I've been at this a little more than 5 years. Every now and again, there are acronyms that still give me a puzzled look, so a month in. Doing great. The first motion went fine, so everything seems to be proceeding well, but we're on all sincerity thrilled to have you and your leadership and your experience with us, and Jewel as well, to have you join the board as well. It's been a busy month. It's always a busy month, particularly at this time of year. We very nearly had to have a special meeting in Terry's third or fourth day as the chair in response to the Silicon Valley Bank crisis. We launched, the governor announced three different initiatives that we launched on the Sunday night before the Federal Reserve had acted to sort of stave off the worst of that crisis, but we had two programs launched within one launched Tuesday, one launched Wednesday of that week. We were prepared to have a special meeting to launch a third program that didn't end up being needed because the Fed had acted, but I think a strong signal and testament to Governor Murphy's commitment and leadership in entrepreneurship and innovation that New Jersey was the first in the nation state level to step up and say we're going to do something to help our startup community. The team that worked on that over the weekend, led by Kathleen Clark, we'll hear from in a few minutes and talk about one of those programs and a couple tweaks we want to make to them. I think it was a living, breathing example of Governor Murphy's commitment to innovation, entrepreneurship, and our startup ecosystem. Demonstrated that through that weekend in the early days. We followed through with that. We had a great back to our second in-person founders and funders event at TCNJ a couple weeks ago. Great event, great turnout. 33 different startup companies there, 20 different investor groups trying to do some matchmaking and some speed dating. And that's a really good example of some of the ecosystem support that we can provide as well. Program-wise, in the last month, we've had our first approvals under two relatively new and extremely important programs. One is the Child Care Facilities Improvement Program. That we've talked about a number of times in this board, the first approvals made in the last couple weeks, and that machine continues to operate, so probably could be approvals happening while we sit. Oh, the Tara's sitting right there without her computer open, so no approvals can be happening in this present moment, but soon, once the meeting ends, we'll get back to that. And similarly, the manufacturing voucher program, I don't know where Paul is, but Paul may be approving applications in the back of the room as well, under the manufacturing voucher program, those approvals have started as well, so bumping along there. Chairman mentioned the CPACE program. We have a really important information session on Friday. It's a new program. We'll be before this board, hopefully in the next month or so, in the next month or two, with the program guidelines for that. We're doing a listening session. That's a really important part of the clean energy agenda as well. We are candidly and transparently a bit behind on getting that program stood up, so we're trying to play a bit of catch up and hopefully having a good session on Friday when we can get some feedback on those guidelines. Two last things I'll mention. Last Monday, we issued an RFQ. A really important milestone for the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center that's going to be located here in Trenton, something that has been a major priority for First Lady Tamara Murphy and Governor Murphy and the entire administration to endeavor to change the terribly unacceptable outcome and reality of the disparity of infant and maternal health outcomes in Trenton, in New Jersey, particularly for Black and Latino moms here in Trenton and across the state. really excited to be rolling that project forward and hopefully getting some good responses and feedback from health providers, from community-based organizations, from higher education institutions, and hopefully bring together a great project there. The last thing I'll mention, we just announced either last night or this morning, the cannabis program will open next Thursday, which if anyone happens to be having a calendar open, I believe it's April 20th. For those who observe the holiday, so we will open the grant application on next week as well for that. So we're excited to get that rolling as well. Kidding aside, it's a really important part of Governor Murphy's commitment to building an equitable and inclusive cannabis industry and creating some jobs and prosperity and wealth creation opportunities, particularly for folks who have been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. So excited about that. A lot going on. I could keep going, but I won't because this isn't a filibuster. And again, most importantly, Chairman, welcome. Joel, welcome. And appreciate everyone's leadership and participation and support. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. In advance of this board meeting, the EDA audit and policy committees both met. The audit committee met on March 30th and discussed matters that fall under its jurisdiction, including financial updates, updates on audits, and other relevant topics. The policy committee also met on March 30th and reviewed several memos, including an award of a contract for consulting services for shifts in IRA analysis, an MOU with Rowan College of South Jersey for wind turbine tech training, a recommendation to increase funding for temporary employees to support Main Street micro business loan processing, and two board memos relating to the New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program recommending additional funding. So we'll move forward on that. And the first item is consulting services for CHIPS and IRA analysis, the contract award that will be presented by Emma Corrado.
Thank you. The members of the board are asked to approve a consulting award to McKinsey & Company for the creation of a strategic plan on how New Jersey can best leverage funding opportunities available under CHIPS and IRA for one term at the price of $2,468,400. The Creating Helpful Incentives to Produce Semiconductors, CHIPS, and Science Act was signed into law by President Biden in August of 2022 and provides roughly $280 billion in new funding to boost American research and manufacturing of semiconductors by supporting funding for manufacturing, supply chains, research and development, cybersecurity, clean energy, quantum computing, and AI. The Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, was also signed into law by President Biden in August of 2022 and will raise $738 billion while authorizing $391 billion in spending on clean energy and climate change and $238 billion in deficit reduction. Due to the over $518 billion available in federal funding for clean energy manufacturing and other economic development programming, the NJEDA utilized the Division of Purchase and Property, DPP, within the New Jersey Department of Treasury State Contract Service, in which McKinsey is the vendor, to request their consulting services. NJEDA received McKinsey's initial response in February for two support models, and after further evaluation by EDA staff, the authority selected McKinsey's proposal for support model one for a price of $2,468,400. Under support model one, McKinsey will review both the CHIPS and IRA Act to determine how New Jersey can best leverage available funding sources, and will create a strategic plan for standing up the delivery and implementation of the identified funding opportunities. The contract will run for a total of 12 weeks, with 4 weeks to develop the legislative package perspective, followed by a 5-week effort to develop and refine the strategic plan and approach. Furthermore, the EDA will be reimbursed for this contract through American Rescue Plan Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions, and I'm joined here, too, by Maurice, Ted, and Doug from procurement, if anyone has any more technical questions on the procurement process.
Any questions? Okay, can I ask for a motion to approve?
Second, motion to approve.
Thank you. A second?
Goodwin, second.
Now we're all set.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Hearing none, thank you, Emma. The next item is the Wind Power Ready Program Memorandum of Understanding between the NJEDA and Rowan College of South Jersey, presented by Jen Becker, Vice President, Offshore Wind.
Good morning and welcome, Chairman.
The board is asked to approve an MOU between EDA and Rowan College of South Jersey, referred to as RCSJ, that will enable EDA to provide up to $250,000 in reimbursement to RCSJ as they incur costs to support the implementation of Wind Power Ready, a wind turbine technician training program. The board is also asked to approve utilizing funding from the $5 million allocated via the February 24th, 2023 grant agreement between EDA and the Department of Treasury for EDA's Wind Institute for Innovation training activities and delegated authority to extend the MOU by up to 12 months if needed. Offshore wind is one of New Jersey's strategic growth sectors. Following recommendations laid out in Governor Murphy's Wind Council report, EDA is undertaking Wind Institute for Innovation training activities to coordinate and support offshore wind-related workforce training. One particular need is offshore wind technician training, which currently does not exist in New Jersey. Consequently, in June 2021, EDA issued the Wind Turbine Technician Grant Challenge to develop an industry-recognized wind turbine technician training program. EDA entered into a grant agreement with RCSJ to develop the suite of programs for wind turbine tech training in September 2021. To run the certificate program, RCSJ determined to work closely with Ørsted, the developer of New Jersey's first offshore wind project, Ocean Wind 1, to create a certificate program to train New Jersey residents from the skills required for entry-level wind turbine technician positions. The resulting program, Wind Power Ready, is set to run between July and December 2023 as a free, full-time training program that combines classroom education and hands-on learning. While the program will be open to all New Jersey residents, RCSJ's recruitment efforts will focus on Atlantic City, the location of Ørsted's operations and maintenance hub that will serve Ocean Wind 1 and Ocean Wind 2. The program will offer a comprehensive set of wraparound services, and participants will receive paid stipends during their training. Upon completion, they will receive prior learning assessment credits as well as a number of industry credentials. RCSJ's goal is to run the program for 20 to 25 participants and has obtained a commitment from Ørsted for a good faith hiring effort for 40% of participants from this training program. Ørsted's hiring for Ocean Wind Turbine Techs will take place at the program's completion. The proposed MOU will provide up to $250,000 to RCSJ to support the implementation of this program. The funding can be used to cover the following types of expenses: marketing and recruitment activities and materials, tuition costs and participant stipends, transportation costs and other wraparound supports, participant personal protective equipment, and other costs related to the implementation of the program, subject to EDA's approval, so long as those costs are not already covered by the existing grant agreement. RCSJ will track and report the expenses to EDA, after which EDA will reimburse RCSJ for eligible expenses up to $250,000. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions?
I do have questions. The wind turbine technician, what are they going to train them to actually do?
So the turbine technician position are the people that are responsible for maintaining and repairing the turbines once they're installed. So the program will introduce people to mechanical, electrical, hydraulic skills, give them sort of exposure to working at heights, being on a vessel. It's a very particular occupation, one that's brand new for New Jersey. So it's a program to expose people to those types of skills. There's a lot of on-the-job training that happens once people are hired, and this is really to prepare people for to be considered as qualified candidates.
And how long would the program be?
5 months. I'm sorry?
How long would the program be for the students?
It's 5 months.
So you're going to be training somebody in 5 months to be an electrician, a plumber, pipe fitter, mechanic?
It's a program to prepare people for that position. There's a lot of on-the-job training that happens. So once you're hired as a wind turbine technician, you're not out there on your own. You're, it's a very unique environment that people are working on. So there's a long time after you're hired where you're having a lot of on-the-job training under supervision. So this is a program to introduce people to that occupation to be in the entry-level position for it.
And there's a typo. Sorry, Commissioner, question. At the end of this,
you're not an electrician, plumber, pipe fitter, or whatever. You're a wind turbine technician.
You're a wind turbine technician.
Yeah, works with all those folks, but it's not the same thing.
Right, you got an NEPA 70E, that should be NFP 70E.
Sorry, thank you for that.
I have a question. 20 to 25 participants that you're going to be soliciting to have join this apprenticeship program. Is it just a one and done, or is this something that will be, you know, done over a period of a couple of years?
So it's not a formal apprenticeship program, but this particular program, as it's designed right now, is for this hiring time. These are positions that so the next hiring round will be really like large hiring round, I guess, for wind turbine technicians would happen when Ørsted is ready for their Ocean Wind 2 program and Atlantic Shores is ready for their first project, which is a few years from now. So this particular program, as it's designed right now, is for this one time only. I would expect that when we are ready for the next round and are talking to the expected employers at that point, there would likely be some tweaks. But we have a really great base here with RCSJ to implement that program going forward.
So this is just for the Ocean One?
Yeah, so this is a particular, there's not that many wind turbine technicians, literally offshore wind turbine technicians needed right now. This is an occupation that is set to grow as this industry grows. So we want to make sure that we're not training people for jobs that don't exist. So this is a program like at the end of this completion, there's a real hiring push. And then, there'll be additional here and there. But once we get to that next round of projects, then there'll be another big push of hiring for wind turbine technicians.
I have some concerns about that, only because you're looking to put 25 applicants in through training. In the very beginning, you're going to send 25 realistically apprentices to be a technician that really doesn't know what they're doing. Right, once they're built, right now you got to maintain them. Right, so now that apprentice has to be trained on electrical, mechanical. They got to be able to climb and all that. To train them to be at that skill level where they're going to be maintaining it, I find it hard to believe that they're going to be able to be trained, especially putting 25 new employees on that do not know anything.
Yeah, and again, they wouldn't be out there on their own. So this is a very specific occupation that has a particular supervisory framework for it. So people that are going through this program are certainly not going to be out there on their own for quite some time, several years, and there's a particular sort of ladder that people would go as they get more experience and more training. So this is really their, entry into it. We are really excited about the employment opportunities for offshore wind in New Jersey, wind turbine tech being one of many occupations, but a really important and permanent one. We want to make sure that opportunity exists for New Jersey residents. So this is a program that is really geared to get people, exposure and ready to enter this entry-level position. But it is not the end-all. This is not the only training that someone would need, by no means. This is the beginning.
You need 7 years of training to tell you the truth to be a wind turbine technician, because they're not going to have an electrician just do the electrical work and the mechanical guys. That's all going to be under one umbrella, realistically, as an instrumentation technician. That's most likely what's going to be the maintenance technician for that.
Yeah.
He is well-versed in both trades.
Yeah, so it's absolutely a multi-disciplinary position that requires a lot of different skill sets. Again, it's a it's a lot of training and exposure and that happens once the person is on the job, so that once you're out there in that supervisory position, you have all the skills and expertise that are needed to make the decisions that you need to make to be able to maintain those machines out there. So absolutely is a long-term time frame for someone to be out to be the supervisor, to be out there on their, to have that responsibility. But this is a program to bring people into the fold from the beginning stage. And I'll just sort of add, this is a program that's been, designed with Ørsted's input in the curriculum. So this is, from the end employer looking at what they'd be looking to the requirements that they would be looking for to hire people as entry-level technicians. So there's a lot of, you know, direct engagement between RCSJ and ORSTED to develop this program so that people completing the program or, you know, ORSTED understands the training that they've already gone through and that they would then would need to continue on as ORSTED employees.
Any other questions? Okay, can I have a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Any additional discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Not heard. Motion carried. Thank you, Jen.
Just to check any abstentions or recusals.
Okay, the next presentation is Christina Fuentes and Nye Marshall on a recommendation to increase allocation for temporary employees to support the Main Street micro business loan process.
Nye is bumping Christina.
Oh, okay.
Christina, sing harmony if needed.
Good morning.
Good morning. Staff is seeking board approval to increase the allocation for temporary employees from the previously approved $250,000 allocation to $1 million, utilizing the Main Street Recovery Fund appropriation established through the Economic Recovery Act. This increase in funding will support the cost to maintain the current temporary staff provided by 22 Second Century Technologies that are currently processing loan applications, as well as the hiring of additional temporary employees to support the processing and closing of applications for the Main Street microbusiness loans. Since at our February board meeting, the funding allocation for this product increased from $20 million to $45 million. This additional funding for temporary staffing is needed to continue the support of the processing of this high-volume product. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve,
Marcia. Thank you. Second?
Jewel.
Okay.
And
Fine.
Second.
Thank you, Jewel. Any discussion? All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any refusals or abstentions? None heard. The motion passes. Next, we have Jason Miller presenting two items. Item one is supplemental funds for New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grants and Awards. Good morning.
Good morning. Asset Activation is requesting approval for supplemental funds and recommending awards for two applications. The program was approved in March of 2022 with an award pool of $400,000. We began accepting applications in July and received 11 applications in total before the acceptance period was closed. Two applications were awarded at the November board meeting, and six were awarded in February of this year. As a result of the eight awards to date, only $42,000 remain of the original $400,000 award pool. This amount is insufficient to fully fund the next eligible applicant, LTD Unlimited, who is requesting $49,800 in grant funding for their proposed project, a remediation needs assessment and feasibility study of three tax lien foreclosed city-owned properties in downtown Salem. Two of the properties on Broadway are mixed-use storefronts with apartments above, while the Capstone building at 113 Market Street is a key historic property in the community, which has had a tavern located on the site since 1730s. Completion of the study would help prepare the site for possible application to other EDA assistance, including the Historic Properties Reinvestment Program. Our program's current funding situation also leaves the final applicant, Financial Wellness Institute Incorporated, or SWI, without available funds as well. SWI requested $50,000 for a remediation needs assessment and feasibility study of the old Sketch Club building, a former theater in Woodbury, New Jersey, which is owned by the city. As both these applicants were submitted during the application period while the program still had available funds, and they were reviewed by staff and sent to our scoring committee as per our rolling evaluation process. The scoring committee determined that both LTD Unlimited and FWI exceeded the requisite overall score and, in fact, were among the highest scoring within the program. Additionally, both proposed projects are located within municipalities ranked in the top 10% of the Municipal Revitalization Index, which means they are in communities targeted for redevelopment assistance. Given the strength of these two applications and the contributions they would make to our program goals, program staff recommend allocation of funds from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act Planning Grant Appropriations transferred by the New Jersey Department of Treasury to the New Jersey Economic Development Authority designated to the Economic Recovery Fund in the amount of $57,800 to supplement the New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant Program, and recommend awards to LTD Unlimited and FWI in the amounts of $49,800 and $50,000, respectively. If approved, these two awards would conclude the decisions for all submitted applications and dedicate all original and supplemental funds to the program. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now.
So it's 57,000 of additional funds?
57,800, yes.
Into the pot, which would then allow you to...
Thanks.
Questions?
Motion to approve?
Gibson, so moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any additional discussion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions?
Hearing none, motion passes.
Second item, Jason.
Thank you. We are also requesting allocation of funds from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act Planning Grant Appropriation transferred by Treasury to EDA and designated to the Economic Recovery Fund in the amount of $500,000 to capitalize a new round of asset activation planning grants. Recognizing that a long history of economic paradigm shifts has left distressed properties in all parts of the state unable to adjust to new and future needs, this grant program was created as a means to jumpstart forward-looking development projects that activate deficient, underutilized, or vacant public assets in a way that will benefit their community and the regional economy through the funding of pre-development planning. The program looked to expand on existing EDA planning assistance programs that focused on specific geographies, assets, or applicants. The program's pilot round was successful in this regard, receiving a strong and varied interest with 11 applicants submitted for projects in 10 different counties. Seven of them were in communities that ranked in the top 10% of the Municipal Revitalization Index, which is an evaluation of economic distress meant to help target state resources, and also qualifies them for application fee waivers in the program. Among these applicants were nonprofit organizations, private corporations, state institutions, municipalities, and public authorities. Several of the non-governmental entities were also women and minority-led. The variety of the assets targeted by proposals reinforced the approach for the program to be bottom-up rather than prescriptive in its scope. Projects ranged from an empty arena and condemned parking garage to a small parking lot and a main street right-of-way. There were several vacant structures, including a theater, a museum, several mixed-use buildings, and an underperforming shopping plaza, as well as an entire riverfront district. Many of these projects may not have otherwise been on our radar for development assistance and would not have had any other resources to move them back toward productive use. The effectiveness of the program has also been attested by some of our earlier awards demonstrating their positive impact. The Meadowlands Regional 2040 Foundation recently completed their market analysis and feasibility study for a conference center to replace the former IZOD Center sports arena. Their study results provided the basis to establish an organizational and funding process to advance their design concept toward development. Program staff continue to receive inquiries regarding further availability of grants and application opportunities, indicating there's a strong demand across the state for this type of planning assistance. Given the results of the pilot round and continued interest from potential applicants, we recommend that the board approve an additional $500,000 from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act to capitalize a new round of awards for the program. If approved, all specifications from the original pilot round would remain the same. Extending this program is expected to continue the expansion of EDA's outreach to new communities around the state, connecting them to these and additional resources to help make their communities and local economies stronger and more vibrant. If you have any questions about this, then I'd also be happy to answer them.
The award recognition will come back for a separate approval.
Exactly. Just as the
round. Another round of
And Jason, the first round was How much was that in total?
$400,000 originally, and then minutes ago added.
Okay. So roughly the same size.
Yes.
Yeah. Any questions? Can I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Schenkel.
Thank you, Robert. Second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor, indicate by saying aye. So aye.
Aye.
Any,
aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Jason. The next item on the agenda is the Director's Loan Review Committee Report. Marcia, do you want to say a few words?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. The Director's Loan and Review Committee met on March 29 to review the request to approve updates to the New Jersey Entrepreneur Support Program to help them navigate the current liquidity crisis / banking crisis brought on at more than partially, I don't want to totally blame the Federal Reserve, but brought on by the Federal Reserve's recent interest rate tightening. Chairman, this was the only item reviewed by the committee. I now turn the meeting back over to you and the staff to explain these update requests.
Thank you, Marcia. The first item is an update to the New Jersey Entrepreneur Support Program presented by Clark Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before the board is a memo for updates to the New Jersey Entrepreneur Support Program, or ESP, more acronyms for you there. This program was launched in 2020 to address the financial needs of very early stage companies that stemmed from economic uncertainty with the initial stages of the COVID pandemic. In 2023, necessary actions that were taken during the pandemic resulted in added stress to the financial system that catered directly to these early stage entrepreneurial companies. To respond, the NJESP was reopened in March 2023. Through NJESP, the authority provides guarantees on short-term loans provided to startup companies by their existing investors. The guarantee is 80% of the loan amount. Caps are placed on the total amount of guarantees extended to a company, which is $200,000. The guarantee is for 1 year. The loan must be unsecured and require no payments for that year. Guarantee payment can be requested if the company goes out of business or doesn't have the liquidity to repay at the end of the year. The guarantee expires if the note is extended beyond that year or gets repaid. The guarantee also ends if the loan converts to equity, but in this case, the EDA would receive a warrant equal to 20% of the guarantee amount that allows the EDA to purchase future equity in the company. To confirm that we are supporting New Jersey-based companies, 50% of the employee base must be here in New Jersey. The company must also have an office in New Jersey. When launched, the program is designed to support the earliest stage of companies, so limits were placed on total employees and annual revenue. But in the current economic environment, we want to address the larger systemic issue and support a larger segment of the affected market. So staff is proposing to make updates to the program, as noted in the memo. These include allowing new company investors to apply in addition to existing, raising the amount of guarantees open per company to $400,000. This would equate to $500,000 in loans, raising the total employee cap to 225, removing the revenue threshold, also updating specific dates so that eligibility is current. This is like for a loan closing date and our employee evaluation date, and also moving to the current set of targeted industries for the EDA. These updates will allow the EDA to better assist all the companies experiencing challenges due to the financial issues, as well as make program requirements more in line with other current EDA programs. This concludes my prepared comments, and happy to address any questions at this time.
Any questions? Could I have a motion, please, to proceed?
Motion to proceed, Marcy.
Thank you. Second?
Giblin, second.
Thank you. Any additional comments or questions? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? And hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
I think we now turn to the Incentives Committee report. Ginny, I know you're on the phone. Do you want to say a few words in advance of the items?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I do want to give you a warm welcome. I apologize for not being there in person. Having had the fortune of working with you in the past, I can assure this board that we are really honored to have such a talented executive lead our board now. So thank you very much. But I will say the Incentives Committee met on March 30th, and we have a couple items before the board. One of my favorites, the Food Desert Program. We have a tax credit as well as a tax credit sale that we're looking for approval, as well as a modification and an appeal under Grow New Jersey. So I think that's it for now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ginny. We'll now move to the items for approval. The first is a presentation on rules for Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Program presented by Tara, Brian, and Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome to Jewel. Excited to be working with you. This is a big moment for the Food Desert Relief Act and really Governor Murphy's broader food security agenda. I want to start by thanking pretty much everyone in this room. This has been a very long journey, and we're just so grateful for all the partnership and collaboration within EDA as well as across the entire Murphy administration, as well as with our partners in the legislature, especially Speaker Coughlin, who has really championed this issue from the outset. I'm going to be hearing from Brian Todd, our Senior Advisor for Food Desert Relief, and Riley Edwards, our Team Lead for Economic Security Projects. I also have to thank Richard Godry and Emily Apple, who are here, as well as the dynamic duo of Gabriel Chacon and Betty Renard, who we lured out of retirement for the second time, who has been central to this entire process. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
She's here in person. The paparazzi is waiting for you outside.
We'll be taking, issuing autographs. It's remarkable. So thank you. Just as context and as a reminder, the Food Desert Relief Act is one of the 15 or so programs that are established in the Economic Recovery Act. Last year, this board approved the designation of 50 food desert communities, which collectively are home to 1.5 million New Jerseyans in all 21 counties, covering parts of 57 municipalities. And what became clear through that process, as well as the subsequent community engagement and listening sessions that we've engaged in, is that there's not one solution to an issue as complex as food deserts and food insecurity. And so we're really proud and excited to be bringing to the board a set of programs that will support close to $250 million in resources to take some very big swings at this issue. You'll be hearing about the establishment of the tax credit program under the Food Desert Relief Act, as well as our request to sell a portion of those tax credits to generate cash that we can use to support other programs. And I just want to, again, say that this has been something that we've been very committed to having be driven by input, recognizing that there's not one solution to this issue in the diversity of the communities that are facing challenges around food deserts and food insecurity. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian and Riley to present on the nuts and bolts of this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Welcome. I'll be talking about the Food Desert Tax Credit Program, which we are seeking approval of today. As Tara mentioned, it is one portion of this program, and we did reach out through community through our EO 63 sessions, getting feedback, as Tara mentioned, as well as talking to industry groups, industry players along the way. And as this program moves forward, we'll definitely be doing that much more in a matchmaking basis to make this a success. The Food Desert Tax Credit Program basically provides tax credits to incentivize the development and operation of new supermarkets in the 50 food desert communities that Tara mentioned. The applications will be on a rolling basis, and the main reason for this, of course, is to bolster access to nutritious foods, particularly for SNAP and WIC recipients in the state of New Jersey. In New Jersey, there are somewhere around 850,000 SNAP recipients. About two-thirds of those are families with children, and that provides income for the supermarkets as well. It's about a $2.6 billion in sales each year that will help supermarkets in food deserts as well. Again, we're also looking at this from a standpoint to make the program longer lasting. So we have broken it down into two tax credits. The first is the development, the financing gap tax credit, which will be going to developers, which will reward up to 20 to 40% of project costs capped at the project financing gap. Again, as Tara mentioned, it's a $240 million program, $60 million a year, of which some of will be used for this process. The other tax credit is an initial operating cost tax credit. Again, supermarkets typically take 5 to 7 years to become financially viable. Therefore, we want to help the retailers get above that hump. So for the first 3 years of the program, we have set up an operating tax credit whereby when we see the financials from each company, they will be able to give us their whatever their operating cost shortfall is, which is basically taking their operating costs, which do not include inventory for supermarkets. It's exclusive of that. And then working with that and then using a standard industry profit to give each organization kind of making sure that they will become more than whole. So, for example, if a store in the first one of the 3 years has a 2.5% loss, we would make that up and then give them a standard industry profit based on guidance from industry groups and outside sources to give that. So if the standard industry profit is 2.5%, then we would give them a 5% operating shortfall. Again, to receive both tax credits for a single supermarket or grocery store, both applications would have to be received in tandem. We expect that some will be developers looking for operators, other will be operators looking for developers, so we would want them to work. In some cases, it may be the same exact entity. As far as requirements, what we're looking for is we will be funding for up to 2 qualifying grocery stores for Food Desert Community. Each store would have to be a minimum of 16,000 square feet with at least 80% occupied by food-related products. To put that in perspective, 16,000 is a smaller size supermarket. A typical large retailer could be anywhere from 50 to 60,000 square feet. But in many cases, a large 50 to 60,000 square supermarket obviously wouldn't be effective in a food desert community. They must have started construction after January 2021, which was the effective date of the FDRA. And we will also be looking at rehabilitated supermarkets, and if they are being rehabilitated, they must include the repair and replacement of 2 major systems, impact 75% of the square footage, and must be at least 75% of the property value. And the stores must continue to meet the milestones set by the authority for 7 years. The development tax credit will be granted over 4 years with a 3-year commitment period. And the operating tax credit will be for 3 years with a 4-year commitment period, bringing everyone to that 7 years. Again, going back to that 5 to 7 year period that typically makes supermarkets economically viable. Some of the other eligibility criteria, obviously, without the tax credit award, the project will not be economically feasible. Again, that the supermarket or grocery store will be open for 7 years and economically and commercially viable by the 7th year. We'll be doing this upon application. They'll be required to give us a feasibility study, pointing all of this out by an independent third party that will be evaluated. We have to make sure that the costs are in line with industry standards, and that obviously a financing gap and initial operating cost shortfall exists. Except for demolition and site remediation, construction cannot have commenced. And the applicant, again, must commit that the supermarket will accept SNAP and WIC benefits, again, going back to my earlier comments. They'll also have to commit. One of the things that we heard during the listening sessions was the effectiveness of having fresh produce and fresh products available. So they'll have to commit that the supermarket will maintain at least 10% of retail space to fresh and or frozen produce, which is a little greater than industry averages that are out there. And the applicant must commit to holding 1 community listening session annually, again, to get feedback from the community so we know where they're standing. And they'll be required to do that each year. And I think that's kind of a summary of the program, this portion of it. Riley will go over the tax credit auction, but be glad to answer any questions in the meantime.
I guess we should have mentioned that there is a slide on the board that summarizes some of these points, correct? Sorry.
There they are. I didn't realize that was going to come up. Thank you. Okay.
Questions?
When you, a part of the evaluation period, they have to submit financials, you'll do an evaluation. If you, if their findings, are there protocols or steps that they can implement to improve their standing so that we can make sure that they're viable post the 7 year completion?
Oh, over each year, right, they'll be required to give their financials, and then we will be evaluating them based on that. So based on the numbers that they give, then that would result in the tax credits that they would receive. But, yeah, we will be looking at it, and there will be, you know, if they do not meet one of the standards, depending on what it is, we would certainly be able to go back and find out why on that section. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, what the specific process is that would happen through.
On the construction portion of it, prevailing wage is going to be...
Yes, I might have missed that. Prevailing wage would be on the construction portion of it. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
If we're going back to January 7th to 21, how are we going to make sure that, if we're going back in time, how do we make sure that the people that constructed the project were paid the prevailing wage?
Well, actually, it would be for a supermarket that is... they cannot have started construction on that supermarket until they apply and would have to be pre-approved. If it's a store that had been open and they're rehabilitating, that's a different story. But again, they would have to it would have to be before they started doing that project. Yeah.
And then there's a labor harmony agreement for just the supermarket workers.
The labor harmony agreement would be, if they have a labor harmony agreement, then they would be eligible for the maximum 40% tax credit.
And is that just for the supermarket workers?
That would be
for the permanent jobs.
For the permanent, right. Thank you very much.
Why was that supermarket construction?
Why is it just for the permanent jobs? Are construction jobs not considered permanent jobs?
Well, they're exceptions for prevailing wage rules.
I understand, but if we have a labor harmony agreement, why are we not looking for a labor harmony agreement for the construction side of it? Now you're looking at a food desert area. You could provide, a career for somebody that lives in that area. So why are we not looking at the construction side of it?
On the labor harmony basis? Or
yeah.
Basis? So, one, the statute doesn't allow us to. So we had to flex to even do this labor harmony piece on the operating side. The statute does not permit us to do that.
So we would have to change the statute?
The statute would have to change for that.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay. Any other questions?
I'll turn it over to Riley.
Are we going to vote on
We're going to make a motion to approve the rules for the Food Desert Tax Relief Credit Program. May I hear a motion to approve?
Jimmy Bauer, I'll move it.
Jimmy, second?
Second, Angelo.
Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
That'll learn to wait. Any opposed? Any refusals or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Next is the Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Sale.
Good morning. Members of the board, before you is a request for approval of the sale of up to $50 million in tax credits in calendar year 2023, consistent with the Food Desert Relief Act. Proceeds from the sale would fund grant, loan, and technical assistance programs to complement the tax credit program in improving food access and security in designated food desert communities as specified by the Act. The specific programs to be funded by auction proceeds will be brought to the board separately. This memo also requests delegated authority to the CEO to set the amount of credits offered up to the $50 million cap, to set dates for the auction, and to approve eligible bidders. The Food Desert Relief Act allocates $40 million annually in corporate business tax and insurance premiums tax credits over 6 years, beginning with fiscal year 2021. EDA may either award these credits through the Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Program or may sell the tax credits through a competitive process. Any unawarded or unsold tax credits roll forward to future years. Today, a cumulative total of $120 million of tax credits is currently available, and an additional $40 million will become available on July 1st. For this auction, the minimum bid price is set at 85 cents for each dollar of tax credits, and the minimum tax credit purchase offer will be $500,000. Along with their bids, bidders must provide a refundable deposit for 10% of the tax credit purchase offer. To be eligible, a bidder must be a New Jersey corporate business tax or insurance premium tax filer and must be in good standing with the Division of Taxation, the Department of Labor, and the Department of Environmental Protection. If the auction is oversubscribed, the authority will seek best and final offers from all bidders. Eligible bids will be ranked based on bid price. Staff will determine the clearing price, defined as the highest price at which the amount of tax credits requested at or above that price equals or exceeds the total amount available. Bidders below the clearing price will be declined. Bidders above the clearing price will be approved for their full purchase offer. If the amount requested at the clearing price exceeds the amount remaining, bidders at the clearing price will receive a prorated amount. If the auction is undersubscribed, remaining credits will be offered to bidders in order from highest bid price to lowest. To conclude, the request is for approval of $50 million in tax credits in 2023, as well as delegated authority to the CEO to set an amount lower than that, to set the dates of the auction, and to approve eligible bidders. Happy to take any questions.
And I would note again, for those in the room, there's a slide with the highlights of the program. Any questions? Can I hear a motion to approve?
Daddy, motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Robert Chimka.
Thank you, Robert. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
I may, Mr. Chairman, real briefly.
Yes,
just want to thank the board for their support for this, those two programs, but the Food Desert program in general. When we think about and we talk about doing economic differently and more comprehensively, this is one of the programs you would point to as sort of a sign and symbol of Governor Murphy and legislature's commitment to comprehensively thinking about economic development, community development, food security, economic security, all in one package. And so this is a proud moment for a lot of us. I didn't do any of the work, but Tara and Brian and Riley and Emily and Janasa and Eddie, lots of other people have done a tremendous amount of work, Gabriel, over the last several years to get us here. So, Grant, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to acknowledge that Charles Farlow has joined my conference.
Excellent. Thank you. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you.
Your timing is exquisite. Next, we will go to Grow NJ. Susan Bryce will present us on Atapharma Inc.'s Grow New Jersey Assistance Program Modification.
Let's give a picture of session. Who's got to this? What's happening? How does Susan end up? Susan's next, I guess.
Okay, back to follow. Try my best. Thank you. So we're requesting an approval to complete the certification of project completion and to affirm that the project is not materially changed because of the reduction of eligible jobs from 75 to 56. We are also requesting delegated authority to approve a further 10% reduction from the current number of 56 if necessary. As a result of this requested change, the approved award will increase by 35% from $4.5 million to $2.9 million with a potential for further decrease. So during certification review, staff performed a routine site visit to verify project completion in the industrial premises bonus, and it was discovered that Aptha Farm was making use of a 12,000-square-foot basement space for additional warehousing and storage, which was not included as part of the approved qualified business facility. It was also determined that this space would not house any employees. So staff reviewed the implications of adding this new space and determined that the minimum capital investment requirement would have increased to $733,000, but it would not have affected the outcome of the certification as the company had spent $5.2 million in capital investment, which was well above that minimum. So since the company did not request to add this space to the QBF, we determined that the additional space would have changed the required capital investment minimum, we decided not to require the incentive agreement to be amended. The executed lease aligns with the approved QBF. The outcome of the project completion certification would not be affected, and there would be no impact to the award. The project continues to operate as described at board approval, with the company expending over $5.2 million in capital investment retaining 40 and creating 16 new full-time jobs. And the project continues to satisfy, 110% net benefit to the state over 20 years. So thus, aside from reduction in new jobs, the project has not materially changed. So again, as a result of this requested change, the approved award will decrease from $4.5 million to $2.9 million. Thank you. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Hearing none, may hear a motion to approve. Thank you. Second?
Giblin, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
Now.
This is right on the GROW and a COVID-related termination delegation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I've been before you all about 12 times over the last year and a half asking for approval for COVID-related terminations for GROW applicants that have certified they've had impacts based on COVID that have really been the impetus for their request of terminating the agreement. At this point, I'm asking for a delegation to the CEO, who can then sub-delegate to staff the ability to approve those. We feel at this point they've become rather routine. We have reason to believe maybe we have 12 to 20 some more that we'll see by the end of this year. The law allows this to go through December of 23. So through our conversations, that's kind of what we think the lay of the land will look like. As with all of our delegations, we would be reporting quarterly to you. And if there are any requests made that don't articulate well the COVID connection, we, of course, would bring those matters to you for consideration.
Any questions? Motion to approve. Thank you. Second?
Second, Marcia Marley.
Thank you, Marcia. No further discussion. All in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Refusals or abstentions? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is an appeal. This appeal relates to the hearing officer's recommendation regarding an application declination and the applicant's appeal of the same. Prior to the board's vote, pursuant to the authority's public comment policy, a single person speaking on behalf of the applicant appealing the decision will be permitted to speak for a maximum of 3 minutes to the board before the board votes on the appeal, consistent with the public comment policy posted on the authority's website. For the next item, the hearing officer will present. The board will then acknowledge one person for the applicant if he or she wishes to speak before the board takes a vote. The board serves as the final decision maker. If the applicant is dissatisfied with the board's final administrative decision, it may appeal to the appellate division of the Superior Court of New Jersey pursuant to the rules of the court. So first, our hearing officer is Giselle Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, staff is recommending the board members to affirm the hearing officer's recommendation to uphold staff's determination to withhold the GROW NJ incentive award for MySUD Italia, Inc., and deny the applicant's appeal. GROW NJ requires a business to submit, amongst other things, a certification from an independent certified public accountant confirming the required capital investments and certifications, attesting to the required jobs retained and or created in order to obtain their tax credits. Failure to provide any of those indicated materials or failure to comply with the regulations deems the applicant ineligible to receive the GROW NJ's tax credit certificate. On May 8, 2020, MySUD submitted a certification of project completion claiming the creation of 22 full-time jobs and an amount of eligible capital investments of $3,653,341. On February 10, 2021, after reviewing the submitted documents, specifically the certification, EDA staff found MySUD to be ineligible to receive the GROW New Jersey Tax Credit Certificate because the applicant failed to satisfy the capital investment requirements of the NJ GROW program as specified in the Act. Specifically, The applicant was denied because its certification stated that the entire $3.6 million of capital investments was incurred by Typical, a third-party entity. On February 25, 2021, Maya Street appealed the denial, arguing that they satisfied the capital investment requirements based on three arguments. First, it argued that the investments made by Typical satisfied the capital investment requirements because Typical was reimbursed by the applicant's landlord, Uberlin. Second, Maya Street argues that it made additional investments not previously submitted in this certification for purchases of equipment and leasehold improvements, which on their own satisfied the capital investment requirements. Lastly, Maya Street argues that due to the COVID-19 pandemic, it was allotted a limited amount of time to provide additional documentation in support of its position. Turning to Maya Street's first argument, that the expenditures were paid by Oberlin, which is the landlord. The acts and regulations which govern these programs state that the capital investments in a qualified business facility must be made by the company, an affiliate of the company, or the landlord. Maya Street does not dispute that the project expenditures were made by Typical. However, they stipulate that Typical is an affiliate of Maya Street's landlord because Typical and the landlord are separate entities with common ownership and that the capital investments made by Typical were reimbursed by Maya Street. However, even if that is the case, it is irrelevant to the EDA's determination as the act and regulations would not allow the landlord's entity to make eligible capital investment, even if that was the case, it's irrelevant to the EDA's determination as the act and regulations would allow the landlord entity to make an eligible capital investment, but not an affiliate of the landlord. Maya Street also argues that Typical made the payments as a construction manager or successor general contractor for the qualified business facility renovations on behalf of the landlord. This fact is also not relevant to EDA's determination as the capital investments cannot be made on behalf of the landlord. Moreover, Maya Street's appeal letter did not indicate that any written agreement existed memorializing what would have been a multi-million dollar contract arrangement between Typical and the landlord. This arrangement where Typical, a third party, pays up front for a construction, is then reimbursed by the landlord, which is then ultimately reimbursed by Maya Street over a full lease term does not fit the definition of a capital investment under the Act. Additionally, Maya Street argues that in previous correspondence with authority staff had referred to Typical as an affiliate of the landlord without showing any concern or identifying that the relationship had any potential issues. However, this fact is irrelevant because even if staff may have conceded that Typical is an affiliate of the landlord, it does not change and cannot change the requirements of the Act, regulations, and agreements which would allow only the landlord to make eligible capital investments, not its affiliates or any unapproved affiliates. As such, the reason for the decline is supported by adequate evidence and should be adopted by the board. Turning to Maya Street's second argument is that the expenditures significantly exceeded the minimum required eligible requirements. Maya Street stated that it made over $2.5 million in capital investments at the QBS between 2018 and 2020. However, none of these expenditures were included in the certification documents submitted at the completion of the project because it believed that the project expenditures made by Typical fit the requirements of the Grow New Jersey and exceeded the necessary requirements. Maya Street's decision to exclude its own expenditures in the certification resulted in the certification failing to meet the capital investment requirements under the new the Grow NJ program. As such, the reason for this decline is supported by adequate evidence and should be adopted by the board. Turning to Maya Street's last argument, that COVID-19 had an impact on the review process, Maestri argues that the preparation and submission of the certification documents happened during the height of the COVID-19 outbreak, which restricted the ability of both the company and the EDA staff to investigate and provide additional support of the affiliations of the companies and the project expenditures. Maestri submitted certification documents on May 8, 2020, but stated that they did not receive notice of the problem, which was typical, having made the project expenditures until December 14, 2020. And as per Maestri, limiting the time for it to provide additional documents. However, in reviewing the provided documents, staff did contact Maestri in November of 2020, where they were given the opportunity to submit additional required documents in connection to the certification. Maestri concedes that it made the decision to submit the capital investment certification and to exclude its own capital contributions from the certification. Maestri was aware of the requirements in the Act, the regulation, and the incentive agreements. Further, there is no statutory amendment that affords additional extension of time to the deadline for certification of the project due to a submission being provided during the COVID-19 public health emergency. As such, this argument is not persuasive, and the reason for the decline is supported and by adequate evidence and should be adopted by the board. As a result of careful consideration and of the appeal, I am recommending the board deny the applicant's appeal and uphold staff's determination to withhold the Grow New Jersey Incentive Award for Maestri d'Italia. In accordance with the Act, the applicant was provided a copy of the hearing officer's recommendation and was given the opportunity to file written comments and exceptions to the hearing officer's report. On February 7, 2023, Maestri submitted written comments via email correspondence that reiterated the three main arguments posed in the initial appeal. As the hearing officer, I have reviewed the written comments and do not find them persuasive. These written comments have also been provided to the board for review. First, the applicant restated the landlord made the capital investment because the landlord and typical had a construction manager and successor general contractor relationship. However, as previously stated, the appellant did not provide any documents showing such relationship existed, either by contract or supporting documents, and the capital investments cannot be made, or supporting documents showing that a capital investment cannot be made on behalf of the landlord. Second, the applicant states that even if typical made the capital investment rather than the landlord, both under the same ownership and therefore should be treated as affiliates and the capital investment should be eligible. However, as explained in the memo, capital investments in a qualified business facility is defined as expenses made by the company or any affiliate of the company being Maestri, not the landlord. Here, the fact that typical may be an affiliate of the landlord is irrelevant. Third and lastly, the applicant argues that the EDA should have advised Maestri that the capital investments were not going to be sufficient before the denial was submitted. The regulations do state that the EDA may request additional information for the businesses to support the certification. However, the EDA is not obligated to advise an applicant of deficiencies prior to a decision being rendered. As stated, the applicant's written comments do not alter my recommendation to the board that the staff's determination should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. The board will now acknowledge Jonathan Temshin from Tartar, Krinsky, and Drogan, who will speak on behalf of Maestri d'Italia.
Good morning. I'm here for Maestri d'Italia, the applicant. With me here today is Athos Maestri, who's the founder, president, and CEO of the company. To give you all some context, Maestri moved its facilities from Virginia to New Jersey because it wanted to participate in the New Jersey Grow program. It has hired 30 full-time employees and invested itself multi-millions of dollars into this project, believing that it would receive the benefits of this award program. Everyone agrees that if Maestri landlord paid for the capital improvements, that Maestri should receive the investment award. And that's exactly what happens. You've heard from the hearing officer that there's There hasn't been any evidence to support that or that everyone agrees that this company, TIBCO, paid for the capital improvements, but that's flatly not true. We have produced evidence from the landlord itself confirming the relationship between itself and TIBCO. We've supplied bank statements, canceled checks, invoices showing the flow of money from the landlord to TIBCO that was used for the capital improvements. Where I think everybody is getting tripped up is the fact that TIBCO and the landlord are related, the related companies. But I'll offer you all this illustration. What if the landlord hired XYZ Construction Corp to serve as its construction manager? What if the landlord hired XYZ General Contracting Corp to serve as its construction manager and paid that company for the construction? There'd be no question that under that hypothetical, Maestri will have complied with the regulations. The only difference here is that the construction manager and successor general contractor was a related company to the landlord. There's no difference. Other than that, it's exactly the same as the illustration that I just gave you. So why are the incentives being revoked or withheld? I don't know the answer to that. In its initial application, Maestri disclosed that the landlord would be performing the construction work. And as part of that process, gave its lease and a lease amendment showing exactly the process in which the landlord would be paying for the construction work. And then on top of that, once we got the declination letter, we provided additional material from TIBCO, from the landlord itself, describing its relationship with TIBCO and the work that TIBCO was doing, and as well as the bank statements and invoices that I mentioned. We humbly ask that you grant our appeal and reinstate the incentive award under these circumstances. All of the evidence in the record establishes Maestri's right to receive these benefits. There's nothing in the record contradicting any of the positions that have been taken by Maestri. There's other reasons why the appeal should be granted. Putting aside the fact, like I mentioned, that Maestri always disclosed to the EDA that the landlord would be performing this work, the staff was aware that TIBCO was performing the project. It was disclosed in the May 2020 certification. Maestri didn't hear from the board, didn't receive a declination letter on that point until February of 2021, 9 months, almost a year later.
This is
time. Okay. If you all have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer them, but that's the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or considerations from the board?
I have one question. For the general contractor or construction management, did the landlord seek other companies to do the work at all, or was it just a pass-through, you're related to me, I'm going to pay you whatever you're asking for?
So my understanding is that TIBCO served as the construction manager, and there was another general contractor unrelated to the landlord at some point. And then, again, this is my understanding of the way it worked, that general contractor was, for some reason, no longer involved with the project, and TIBCO became the successor general contractor. So I'm not familiar with the landlord's internal machinations and decision-making process on those points. What I do know is this building is much larger than Maestri's space. So they were renovating the entire lot, including the space where Maestri was doing its business. So if you see in the bank statements, you'll see, I think, $7, $8, $9 million moving to TIBCO. That part of that money was for Maestri space, but it was for a much larger project that, frankly, we were not involved with.
I would suggest that we table this matter and consider it at the next board meeting.
I agree with that, Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, the only comment I offer, tabling makes sense.
It's your decision whether it makes sense to me or not. It's irrelevant, but it makes sense to me as well. The variety of business arrangements that exist in the world are not always contemplated by a very specific language of the statute. And we have found ourselves under a fair bit of scrutiny for how we implement statutes in their very specific language. And so, from time to time, this may be one of those circumstances, traditional business, customary business practices and every, iteration and variety of business formations may not, strictly speaking, comply with the statute, and we find ourselves in difficult circumstances. But I think tabling this and giving another look makes all sense in the world. But ultimately, we have to be driven by within the statute in black and white, signed into law.
Just to avoid confusion, let's do motion second and vote on the table.
So vote on the table?
Yes.
Okay. So do I hear a motion to table and take up at the next board meeting?
Do I hear a motion to table?
Second.
I'll second. Jenny Bauer, I'll second it.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? As the motion carries, we'll table it and consider it at the next board meeting. Okay. Charles, thank you for joining. And I think just that we're now going to move to real estate. Do you want to say a few words in advance of the real estate committee items before the board today?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Real Estate Committee did meet on March 29, 2023. We had full representation of all of the board members on the committee. We considered two matters presented by staff. The first is to approve an advisory consulting service agreement for 1 year with 2 year extensions. And the second one was for to retain a real estate broker for the sale of NJEDA owned property. Those two matters were considered in context of the competitive bidding statute. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. The first, we're going to vote on two items. The first is Dan Jennings on recommendation for award.
Good morning, members of the board. We are seeking your approval to enter into a contract with Jones Wang's LaSalle to provide advisory services to the authority. These services include, but are not limited to, market studies, preparing financial feasibility analyses for applications being considered under the authority's tax incentive programs, calculating the economic impacts and fiscal net benefits for projects being considered under those programs, and assessing locations for a future project that the authority endeavors to undertake. If approved, the total contract would be $1.7 million that would cover a three-year term with two successive one-year options. Just quick background. In November 2022, the authority issued an RFP to solicit proposals from consulting firms to provide advisory services that support the authority's programs and projects. The opportunity was widely advertised. It was posted on the authority's website, on the state's business portal, in two newspapers, the Courier Post and Star Ledger. In addition, almost 2,000 companies were identified by the procurement department, and each was sent an email. Two firms responded to the RFP, Ernst & Young and Jones Lang LaSalle. Both proposals were deemed responsive. An internal evaluation committee was established and scored each proposal based on three non-price factors: approach, experience of the team, and personnel assigned to the opportunity. Each firm's proposals was independently scored by the procurement department. We combined the scores for non-price factors and fee proposal to derive a total score for each respondent. In order to be recommended, both firms needed to achieve a score of 3. Both met that threshold. Jones Lang LaSalle achieved a score of 4.5, while Ernst & Young achieved a score of 3.5. Therefore, we are recommending JLL for this award. Again, if approved, the contract would be for $1.7 million and cover a three-year term with two one-year options. Happy to answer questions at this point. Any questions? Can I hear a motion to approve?
Well, real quick, I'm sorry. This is Rob Angelo. Is this for specific properties or all EDA properties?
No, it's not for all EDA properties. What happens is we'll identify a challenge that we need some assistance on. So it's really, we don't go into the opportunity knowing always knowing like which projects they're going to work on over the three-year term. It just depends on the nature of the assignment.
Your question might be, hey, Rob, I think your question might be on the second item around our properties. Why don't we do it in a moment?
Okay, my bad. Sorry.
Anybody?
Any other questions? Can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion to approve.
A second?
Yes, my Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? No opposed. I'm going to abstain because JLL has done work for portfolio companies in the past.
Okay. That's probably more of a recusal.
Okay. All right, so motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Juan Burgos, on the contract for real estate selling broker for selected authority-owned property.
Good morning, members, and welcome, Mr. Chairman. Staff is requesting that members approve the selection and execution of a contract with Jones Lang LaSalle for real estate brokers and services to sell select authority-owned property. In January 2023, procurement team issued a public request for proposals for real estate and selling broker services for various authority-owned properties. In response to the RFP, the authority received one proposal from JLL, which was deemed compliant and scored by the evaluation committee. The committee recommends that the authority retain JLL to provide these services for a three-year term with 2 1-year extensions, which can be solely exercised at the authority's option. Under the terms of the agreement, JLL's commission will be 4.875% and will be fixed for the contract term and any extensions. Under the agreement, no commission will be paid under the following circumstances: transactions between the authority and any state entity or any local government entity, and state entity is broadly defined as an agency, authority, corporate body, state college or university, and on the local level, any agency, authority, or corporate body of a or a local college. The other instance is when the authority staff markets property according to the real estate disposition procedures prior to engaging a broker to sell the property, or when the authority receives an unsolicited offer for property that is not being marketed by staff or not being marketed by the contract, under the contract. Any questions?
Any questions? Hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
Kibler, so moved.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
Thank you. Any additional discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
And again, I will recuse here for the same reason. Tim, over to you for board memoranda.
I'll be really brief, Mr. Chairman. You got two memos in your packet. One is a credit underwriting project approval delegated authority memo for one project, and then some real estate related matters, mostly at the Bioscience Center, and one right of entry. Happy to answer any questions. Again, the flow of delegated memos will continue to grow as we delegate more and more things and have delegated more things in the last year or so. Happy to answer any questions there.
And we do not vote on these, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any questions? All right, thank you. As now the public comment section, I'd like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'd like to ask Manira Sanders to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
As stated in the NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period in person will be acknowledged to speak first during the public comment portion of the meeting. Members of the public attending by phone who are registered and providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Mr. Chairman, I'm advised that we don't have any public comment in person. Operator, please advise if we have anyone registered over the phone.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, on the phones, if you wish to ask a question, press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. and we have no one in queue for public comment.
Okay, if there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for participation, and will now request a motion to adjourn the meeting. May I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All those in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. This concludes our meeting today. Thank you all very much. First meeting.